Naturally occurring black pigments in vegetables, spices, and seeds have been found to have powerful anti-inflammatory effects. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I'm excited about what I think may be the next big thing in anti-inflammatory supplements, a brand new, all-natural daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. Black for Health supports your liver, skin, cholesterol, blood pressure, and weight management, circulation, and immunity. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information or to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuturefarm. Farm, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the place to send questions. And so what's our next question, Layla?
We've got a question from Marianne. I take Dr. O'Hara's probiotics, and the label says to take two daily. Could you please tell me the appropriate dose and kind of probiotics to take in the following scenarios? And the first one is after a colonoscopy. The second scenario is after a course of antibiotics. And the third is after a bout of diarrhea.
Okay.
Well, let's tackle those in order. I mean, the concern after a colonoscopy is a couple of things. You know, one is that you take sort of a purge, and in effect, you strip your intestinal lining of stool and possibly also beneficial bacteria. I mean, you're not taking antibiotics, but you may literally deplete the bacterial colonization in your GI tract. I mean, the idea is to have a clean colon so that they can see the wall of the colon and then won't be interfered with material that's left in the colon. This has not been demonstrated scientifically. I don't think there's any research studies on this, what to do after a colonoscopy, but what makes sense to maybe up your intake of probiotics after a colonoscopy. Is there a, and then the other concern is occasionally, rarely, and this is scary, is that sometimes there can be contamination of the equipment, and that can result in an infection. So it may be also the precautionary principle is take some beneficial bacteria lest these harmful bacteria are able to colonize your intestinal tract. I mean, that's a little bit of a rare scenario, but you know, it happens from time to time, and whole colonoscopy practices have been shut down by the health department due to contamination. And it's a tricky thing because there was a doctor who, you know, I shared the office with, who used to do colonoscopies. And, you know, what you did is basically you threw the colonoscopy device into a disinfectant. Now, you can't take a colonoscopy device that costs thousands of dollars and throw it into an autoclave at high temperature. It would melt the equipment and damage it. So you have to just throw it into a bath of disinfectant. Well, sometimes the disinfectant can't get to all parts of that. And you have to be very careful. I mean, he didn't have I just saw what the process was. We never had a complaint or a problem. But, you know, it can go awry. So suggestion is, go to, a reliable gastroenterologist. I think they're all on track to do that, especially if it's done, in a clean, modern office or as an outpatient in a hospital, as a day procedure. Those would be a couple of considerations, right? Can you think of anything else on colonoscopy?
No, not as far as a probiotic goes. You know, it's just to ease back into your eating patterns as you were before.
Right.
But ease back. I think it's good advice to crowd out any bad bacteria that may proliferate.
Right. And
The
what was
second,
the next scenario? Yeah.
Yeah, the next scenario is, what about after a course of antibiotics?
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's been a little more study of that. And mm-hmm. I've reviewed a lot of the literature on that. And I have to say that the literature on probiotics when you take antibiotics is a little inconsistent. Some of the studies show a benefit of preventing, you know, diarrhea or preventing even worse, C. difficile, you know, Clostridium difficile, which is the dread complication of too many antibiotics. It's a horrible wasting kind of diarrhea that's just very hard to eradicate. But
we like.
Yeah, go ahead.
I knew you were going to go there.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is it's not a bacteria. It's a fungal species. So it actually is resistant to the antibiotics.
Right. So anybody taking a course of antibiotics, it's a good time then to get some Saccharomyces boulardii as well. Remember, whenever you're taking an antibiotic, you want to take the probiotic at least 2 hours apart from the antibiotic.
Right.
And supplementing with Saccharomyces boulardii can help ward off any of those opportunistic mm-hmm. bacteria that mm-hmm. can cause diarrhea and so forth.
It's sometimes the brand name is Florastor, but there are other brand names. But Saccharomyces is the species, and one of the brand names is the popular form of it is called Florastor.
Yeah, although Florastor is full of a lot of different things that I don't really like.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, as far as ingredients. So, okay.
so you want to get like a physician brand.
Kit.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even know that. Oh, mm-hmm. wow. Okay. Well, you know, that's what happens with a lot of these commercial retail vitamins and supplements.
Exactly.
They're a good idea, but then they muck it up with things like titanium.
They do muck it up. And, you know, I'll go on occasion to my local Rite Aid, CVS, Walgreens, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm looking at the supplements mm-hmm. and I'm looking at the ingredients and I, nope.
Yeah.
No. Why take this?
You kind of scope out the competition. Like, you know, what are they selling?
Exactly. There?
Right.
Exactly. What's going on and how are they finding this price point? And then I read the ingredients and I go, oh, that's why. Okay. Put it back.
It's like fish oil, 500 capsules for just $9.99, you know,
right.
Like, what is it? You know,
what is it? Exactly. So, right.
Okay. All right. So the third scenario.
Right. Yeah. After a course of antibiotics and just because frequently many people who take a round of antibiotics will often get some diarrhea afterwards
mm-hmm.
or they'll even have a yeast infection.
Yeah.
See, this is how it upsets the microbiome. So
right.
taking something like a Saccharomyces boulardii is a good idea.
And,
now,
and what's interesting about what's interesting about Saccharomyces is that although it is a fungal species, it actually inhibits Candida.
It's a
fungal species that outcompetes Candida, so it actually has a reputation as being a fungal antifungal.
right. So, a fungal antifungal. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, think of all the other healthy funguses or fungi we eat, like mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
These are good for us. These are good for immunity. And then the third scenario is after a bout of diarrhea. Well, it depends on why did that diarrhea happen.
Right.
You know, was it, you think you got a little food poisoning? Is it a traveler's diarrhea?
Mm-hmm.
Is it,
right.
you know, if it, is it for some other reason? Like you took way too much magnesium?
Right.
Then don't take that much magnesium.
So there's another consideration here, which is that sometimes what is called IBS-D, which is the subtype of irritable bowel syndrome that is designated D, which is diarrhea predominant. There's IBS-C, which is IBS where constipation is predominant. And then there's the mixed types. But with IBS-D, a certain percentage of people with IBS-D have SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth. And when there's too many bacteria, sometimes taking a probiotic can be counterproductive. It can actually cause the proliferation of bacteria, and then you get more GI symptoms. So that's why, you know, different strokes for different folks. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to be careful in a case of SIBO giving a lot of, we don't give our SIBO patients a lot of probiotics until maybe later, right?
Right. We want to eradicate the SIBO first.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, some probiotics may join the party, so to speak. I can't think of a better phrase than that, and I heard somebody say it. I don't remember who.
But, what? Yeah. What? Different strokes for different folks?
Right.
Oh.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, no. That the probiotic can join the party.
Oh.
The SIBO party.
Yes.
And cause more proliferation of SIBO, which is what you don't want. You want to eradicate it. But again, it's worked differently for different people. Some people swear by, I had SIBO, I took this probiotic, and it's all gone. Hey, great. Hey,
yeah.
I'm not going to mess with that.
It's a lock and key phenomenon. We don't know what, you know, the shape of your lock is.
Right.
We haven't reached, we really have not reached the level of precision replacement with probiotics. I mean, that era may come where we'll be able to like take a stool test and say, oh, you're missing this and this, and let's take this specific probiotic and it's going to fit like a lock and key into your situation. We know it's not quite rocket science yet on that.
Yeah.
So, you know, talk to us just briefly about, you know, what do you do if you have diarrhea from a diet standpoint? What's your advice?
Listen, you want to go very, very bland and you want to eat a BRAT diet. BRAT is an acronym, B-R-A-T, for foods that are binding. And the foods that are binding are, the B is for bananas, the R is for rice. And we're talking specifically white rice because there's no fiber there. You don't want to eat brown rice or wild rice. You don't want to eat more fiber. You don't want to go more to the bathroom. That's not the point.
So that arugula salad with onions and walnuts, maybe not such a good idea.
Not a thing, but you want to go very bland.
Okay.
The A is for applesauce. Applesauce can be binding.
Because it has pectin.
And I'll tell you,
it has a soft, soluble fiber that's beneficial.
Yeah, anecdotally, I know people who have trouble with even apples themselves. The fiber in the skin and all, which is very interesting. The T stands for tea and toast, primarily black tea and dry toast. What you would give somebody who has maybe an upset stomach or is experiencing diarrhea. So those are the foods. Those are the foods to take more of when experiencing diarrhea.
Maybe chamomile tea too, because chamomile tea has a bit of a more constipating effect.
Right.
Yep.
It actually calms all those muscles down and everything. So okay.
Peppermint is antispasmodic and maybe good too. All right. So, okay. Good rundown. Let's see. Do we have more in your mailbag?
Yes, but I think it's a good time to take a break.
That's a great idea. Let's do that. Thanks for reminding me. Let's allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. Here goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Biomega Fish Oil from Biotics Research. For over 40 years, Biotics Research has been providing the highest quality supplements, surpassing industry standards. Biomega Fish Oil contains therapeutic doses of vital omega-3s in the triglyceride form, which is highly bioavailable. Biotics Research ensures maximum purity and freshness by managing their fish oils from catch to capsule, verified by rigorous independent testing. For more information, go to drhoffman.com/biotics research. That's drhoffman.com/biotics research for Biomega Fish Oil. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions.
We've got one from Joan. Dr. Hoffman, I'm a nurse. I'm 64. I take metformin for my type 2 diabetes, but now it's shown that there is a link to cancer. What options do I have for getting off metformin? Now, Dr. Hoffman, you remember metformin was recalled a while back because of an unacceptably high level of a probable human carcinogen called N-nitrosodimethylamine.
NDMA.
NDMA, thank you.
Right. Let's leave it at that. So, yeah, NDMA has been a contaminant in some blood pressure medications, and I think that this speaks to our sourcing and our supply chain, which relies heavily on production in China and India. And those countries have had some real problems with quality control, frankly, and we're very reliant on them. So this is one of the things that should come out of COVID-19, out of the pandemic, is that we should develop, you don't want to like find yourself in a war and find yourself dependent on, Russia and China for raw materials, like oil and energy independence. I mean, there's some national security issues associated with this. And when it comes to the safety and health of Americans, we don't want to be dependent on foreign countries that could put the squeeze on us or, frankly, have unreliable production methods. Not to say that everything out of those countries is bad. They make a lot of quality materials and they even provide us with a lot of the raw materials for the vitamin supplement industry. But we have to be careful. So anyway, it's not all metformin. Yeah. As you know, Layla, it's the time release
or extended release,
the extended release. And so there's plenty of metformin that's not extended release. You could use that. That's fine. And by the way, metformin, if anything, has an anti-cancer effect. It's actually been explored as a potential adjunctive treatment for, say, prostate cancer, in particular breast cancer. There's some other studies looking at other cancers. Not all cancers are responsive to metformin. It may have overall anti-aging effects, longevity enhancing effects, precisely because it interrupts the pathways for insulin resistance. Insulin resistance results in high levels of insulin, which may be carcinogenic. And that's why we kind of like metformin for cancer. We give it to some patients even without diabetes when we're trying to prevent cancer from recurring. So we just don't want the extended release for now. And they're going to clear that up. That's just a temporary glitch. It's kind of like, the Boeing 737, whatever that model number is. It, for safety reasons, they had to suspend it. But, they've worked out the glitches and now it's going to be back in action.
Now it's going to be okay.
Yeah. But who flies anyway? It's like, right. Like they can fly some empty planes for a while and see what
happens. Right.
It's not people who are concerned about that should consult with their physicians to find out which brands, not all brands, have been suspended, and then go on the regular metformin. Which may involve taking more pills through the day because it's extended release means you can just take one a day or a couple a day.
Yeah.
And the others you may have to take more throughout the day because they're short acting.
Right. Okay. Dr. Hoffman, do you have another question?
Yeah, I have it's actually something that came up during my show last week. I wanted to run it by you. A woman lists her husband's cholesterol stats. His doctor wants to put him on a statin. She says no. In fact, her reaction is, you need to find yourself another doctor. So let me run these numbers by you. The guy's total cholesterol is over 200. It's 209.
Okay.
His HDL cholesterol is 85.
Great.
His LDL cholesterol is 113. Some doctors... Oh, by the way, the gentleman is 70. He's well, there's no health problems. So that means there's a ratio of cholesterol to HDL of 2.46. And here's a number that you'll want to hear because you really like to hone in on this number. Yeah. Triglycerides, 60. So what do you think? I mean, you haven't met the guy. I mean, look, we're not going to say maybe the doctor knows something that we don't know about this guy's underlying health risks, but the doctor says, cholesterol's too high, we got to lower it. What say you?
Well, when I see triglycerides at 60, we like to see it under 100, we even like to see it under 80. 60 is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
And then, coupled with that, a great, nice, beautiful high HDL of 85, which is the so-called garbage truck. He's got a big garbage truck.
To carry away the bad cholesterol. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when you've got an HDL and triglycerides like that, I don't see a risk factor.
Right. But, I would say, and I didn't, because it was just a recorded call. I didn't see a coronary artery calcium scan result on this guy or even a carotid artery Doppler, to see if this guy is building a lot of plaque. I mean, look, I'm not going to say it's 100% this guy doesn't have some coronary risk, but we can pin that down. We can determine that. But what it speaks to me of is a very rigid mentality among doctors that if a cholesterol is over 200, we must lower it. Or if an LDL is above 100, we must lower it artificially. And the bias is towards statin prescribing. I mean, the doctors are really sold on statins.
Yeah.
And I'm not inalterably opposed to statins. I have, as you know, in our practice,
yes,
we have some of our patients who take statins because they have coronary artery plaque and they have adverse lipid profiles. And try as they might, they can't, you know, with simple lifestyle, diet, exercise, and supplements, overcome that liability.
Mm-hmm.
So why not invoke a statin with, you know, the some benefits to be had? Not, you know, the benefits are oversold. In one study, they found that Lipitor, for example, lowered cardiovascular risk by 35%. Well, what that meant is that if you looked at 100 people, three people who didn't take Lipitor got heart attacks, and
uh-huh,
two people who did take Lipitor got heart attacks. So that's a 35% reduction.
Yeah.
However, that's kind of misleading because it means that, you know, 100 people ended up on statins, only three people were, you know, only one person actually in this case was protected because, you know, so
yeah,
you know, in order to achieve benefits for one person, 99 people had to take it, possibly unnecessarily, with potential side effects. So, you know, that's unfortunately how these drugs are sold and pitched, and very much also with direct consumer marketing. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I agree with the lady who says no, no statins for her husband.
Yeah. So, you know, get a second opinion.
Yes.
See a, you know, perhaps more open-minded physician.
Mm-hmm.
And but absolutely inform the choice with a coronary artery calcium scan, because that scan
absolutely
might reveal the presence of tons of plaque or no plaque,
yeah,
or minimal plaque. And, you know, we're flying
blind. And it's also helpful to get a VAPS test or an NMR test,
yes,
to see what kind of LDL particles these are, HDL,
right,
particles,
right,
these are.
Because
that's informative too.
Exactly, because LDL, there's good and bad LDL. And,
yeah,
you know, some of that LDL may be more benign, the large, fluffy LDL particles, and some may be the small, dense particles, which are more a risk factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we also, I mean, there are other factors that may skew us towards a statin prescribing. For example, a person may have high Lp little a, which, I actually had a discussion once with a doctor. I was going to fight with the doctor about whether the person was going to be on a statin because I thought, well, you know, the cholesterol's not that high. And he explained to me that this person had a very high Lp little a, which I saw, which is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. And he said, under those circumstances, we are a little more aggressive about lowering cholesterol. And I said, you know, okay, I mean, if the patient wants and the patient is tolerating it, and, you know, I'm not going to, you know, arm wrestle you on this. I, you know, you make a good point. And so the patient ended up on a low-dose statin.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Okay.
So
all right,
that's all the time we have for today. We thank you for your questions. Radio program at AOL.com, the destination for more questions. And, you know, have yourselves a great week.
Yes. And thank you, everybody. Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.